day after day. People are drowning because of the obstacles that this man put in the river. Let's be clear, he put 1,000 yards of buoy in the river. The fact is, 1,000 feet, sorry, of buoy was put in the shallow part of this area that this governor has set up as his little theater, it's the only, by the way, it's the only city with this kind of razor wire, with these kinds of barriers. They put it in the shallow part of the river, making migrants go into the deeper parts, putting them into the deep water where hundreds of them have drowned. What this man has done, the cruelty they've created, is unbelievable. And it is a theatrical show that is disgusting and is leading to the deaths of people that are simply looking for a dream, simply looking for opportunity because they're hungry. Because they're hungry. We need comprehensive immigration reform. It's the only solution. No obstacle, no barrier is going to fix this problem. We need comprehensive immigration reform once and for all in this country. And that is the job of a failed Congress who will not act.
I want to thank you for being with us. And I also want to say that interview with Greg Abbott, done by Dana Loesch, the radio and TV host, she's the former spokesperson for the NRA. Democratic Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez, whose district includes Uvalde, recently announced he's running against Republican Senator Ted Cruz for the U.S. Senate. Next up, just out of prison for refusing his mandatory military service in Israel, we speak with the first Israeli conscientious objector since the Gaza assault began over 3 months ago. Stay with us.
Si una noche no vuelvo a tus brazos y se funde mi luna y mi sol. No le pongas candado a tu pecho, ni me prendas velitas de vaso. Regala mis libros, mi ausencia, que la vida es futuro de un rato. Y prende un cigarrillo y apaga los recuerdos. No escuches la risa del dolor, que llorar ya pasado de moda, que llorar.
Prohibido llorar, forbidden to cry, by Vivir Quintana. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel is continuing its attacks across the Gaza Strip, from the north to the south, as the number of Palestinian casualties continues to soar. Over the last 24 hours, at least 142 Palestinians were killed in Gaza, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. Nearly 25,000 Palestinians have been killed over the past 3 months, 10,000 of them children. Thousands of others missing under the rubble, presumed dead, making Israel's assault one of the deadliest, most destructive military campaigns in recent history. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has again rejected calls to scale back Israel's military assault on Gaza or take steps towards the establishment of a Palestinian state. In a nationally broadcast news conference, Netanyahu vowed to press ahead with the offensive until what he called a decisive victory over Hamas. As Netanyahu vows to continue Israel's assault on Gaza, we turn now to the first Israeli to refuse mandatory military service since Israel's offensive began over 3 months ago. Tal Mitnick is an 18-year-old conscientious objector in Israel. Last month, he announced he would refuse military service, saying, quote, "I refuse to take part in a war of revenge." He was sentenced to 30 days in a military prison, was just released yesterday morning. Tal Mitnick is joining us now from a studio in Tel Aviv. Tal, welcome to Democracy Now! Can you talk about why you are refusing?
Thank you for having me on. I am refusing because, like I said, I refuse to take part in this revenge war. I'm refusing because I want to make a statement about how we need to conduct ourselves in this land. I feel like there's too much violence here. There is too much revenge and talk about this side or that side. And we need to talk about how we need to go forward in a future of coexistence where both Israelis and Palestinians can live together and live with security and peace.
So talk about what exactly this means. How did you make this known? Talk about where you served time in prison. And is this just a brief period of days before you're sent back to prison?
Yes, I got sentenced for 30 days for my first sentencing, and I got another draft order for Monday morning, which means I have to get drafted on Monday morning, where I will go and refuse service once again and probably get sentenced again. And this will happen over and over until someone gives up, until the army gives me an exemption.
So talk about the response of your friends, your family. And I was also just wondering, you're an Israeli, but you have an American accent. Are you American as well?
My parents immigrated from the U.S., and we spoke English at home, but I'm Israeli and American, yes.
So
the friends and family response, yeah, yes.
Go ahead.
My friends and family response was, thankfully, mostly very understanding, because people that know me and people that talk to me know that I come from a good place of nonviolence and coexistence. I feel like the people that got to talk to me, also inside military prison, a lot of them Ben-Gvir supporters, they support killing all Arabs. When they got to know me before they knew my political opinions, they understood. They understood that they're people that don't support this. Sorry, I can hear myself twice.
If you can possibly blank that out, because we're not sure how to fix that right now. But just continue to talk, because we don't hear you twice, but we do hear you very clearly. Can you talk about your time?
Okay, yeah. So
in prison, and where are
held? Yeah. So I'm being held in a military prison, where other soldiers that have committed crimes inside the military and got sentenced to military prison are also being held. It's not a fun experience, but it's also not the worst experience imaginable. It's not like the experience that Palestinian prisoners are being held under in the West Bank or inside Israel. Yeah, it's very strict timing, very strict about what you're allowed to do and when. But this is something that I'm willing to do to make an impact.
I'm wondering if you feel the climate is changing among Israelis, and also what Israelis see about what's happening in Gaza. I mean, we just reported, we're talking about now close to 25,000 Palestinians killed, over 10,000 children, over 7,000 women, many believed to be dead in the rubble. We don't even know that count. If you watch something like Al Jazeera or you watch other media, since there are only Palestinian journalists there on the ground, you see endless pictures of carnage, of horror, of babies being pulled out of the rubble, dead or alive. What do you see on Israeli TV? We're talking about people who are just 15 minutes away from Gaza.
So actually, inside prison, the only source of news that we got was one newspaper called Israel Hayom. And every day on the newspaper, there will be pictures of the soldiers that died. And I remember feeling like I feel sad, very sad for the soldiers and the families that have to take this great burden of losing someone close to them. But I know that while seeing soldiers dying, I know that this means that there are much more Palestinian civilians dying, which we don't see in the newspaper.
Who else else are you serving time with in that prison? Who else is there?
Sadly, a lot of the other people there they are deserters, which means that they serve time in the military, and then at some point, for some reason, they went back home and did not come back. Most of these people desert because of socioeconomic reasons. If it's having to take care of their siblings or go work for their family, and when they come back and turn themselves in, we're now seeing a very heavy sentencing of those deserters as a part of the fascist persecution and the fog of war. People that went to work for 3 months to feed their family are now being sentenced to half a year in military prison.
Can you talk about the overall anti-war movement, if there is one in Israel? I mean, there were massive protests, up to 1 million people in the streets, which is massive for Israel, around the Netanyahu wanting to gut the power of the judiciary. Of course, he is under charges himself, and that would help him remain out of prison. But at that point, many reservists said they would not serve in the military. Everything changed after October 7th, Hamas attack on southern Israel. If you can talk about why that did not change you, and how large is the anti-war movement, and do you feel it's growing?
I feel like after the horrendous attack of October 7th against Israeli civilians, there was a very important conception that was broken in Israeli society. The conception that we can live with the siege and with the occupation and not feel it. Now, when that conception is broken, we have a vacuum. And there are two ideas that are trying to pull people. One idea that the right is offering, which is we can't live with occupation, we can't live with siege. This means we need to wipe all of them out. And the other idea, the moderate one, the one that makes sense, is that we can't live with occupation, we can't live with siege, we need to step forward for peace. Inside military prison, I got asked a lot, what do you think, we should just stop the war and put our hands up and not do anything? And I went and answered, no, we need to keep fighting, we need to keep fighting for a just future. We need to stop the physical fighting between us, and we need to very, very aggressively push for a better future.
Wondering your response to Prime Minister Netanyahu once again saying, from the river to the sea. When Palestinian advocates and their allies talk about from the river to the sea, the response of the Israeli government has been, that means they're for the genocide of Jews, because they don't want Jews to be there, the government says. Now you have Netanyahu saying, not that this hasn't been said before by Likud, but from the river to the sea, Israel must control. Your response to that, Tal? And if you can talk about the word occupation, because in the U.S. media also, there is rarely that word used, that Israel occupies the West Bank and Gaza.
The term from the river to the sea is very controversial inside of Israel. And I feel like some people that use it, there are people that use it that mean the genocide of Jews inside Israel. But just the term itself, I feel like, does not mean a genocide of Jews. It means freedom for all Palestinians from the river to the sea. When Benjamin Netanyahu uses this term, it does not mean freedom for all from the river to the sea. It means oppression of Palestinians. And it means Jewish supremacy from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea.
Finally, Tal, I'm wondering your response to Jews around the world, particularly here in the United States, like Jewish Voice for Peace, these massive protests that have been held from Grand Central Station to shutting down the bridges and the tunnels from New York to highways in California, saying, we want a ceasefire now. How do you respond to that, and your final message to other 18-year-old Israelis?
these protests are amazing. These organizations like Jewish Voices for Peace and If Not Now do incredible work, and I support the continuation of these protests all around the world. And a message to other people my age, other kids, I feel like it's important to know that we have a voice. I used to think that that talking to people is all we could do, but we can change, and people want to hear what we have to say because we're the future. And this is, yeah, we're the future, and we can change.
And finally, might you spend months, more than a year in jail if you keep saying no to military service, since Netanyahu says this will go on for more than a year?
Because there's no policy set for jailing conscientious objectors, I don't really know how much time I'll spend in prison, but it could be months.
Tal Mitnick, 18-year-old Israeli activist known as a refusenik. He's refused mandatory military service in the Israeli army, the first conscientious objector in Israel since the Israeli assault on Gaza began over 100 days ago. He's just sentenced to 30 days in prison, which he served for refusing to enlist, was released a few days ago, then will be called up again and says he will refuse again. Coming up next, we talk to a doctor who just came out of Gaza. Stay with us.
Can't you hear the urgent call of Palestine? Can't you hear the urgent call of Palestine? Palestine. Tormented, tortured, bruised and battered, and all her sons and daughters scattered. Can't you hear the sweet, sad voice of Palestine? Can't you hear the sweet, sad voice of Palestine? Palestine. She whispers above the roars of the guns, beckoning to all her daughters and sons.
The Urgent Call of Palestine by Zeynep Shaath. The Palestinian singer recorded this more than half a century ago. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli forces are pushing further into southern Gaza with airstrikes and ground troops attacking areas that Israel had previously told Palestinians to flee to as safe zones. Over the past few days, Israel's bombed areas close to Nasser Hospital, the largest remaining semi-functioning health facility in Gaza, located in the southern city of Khan Yunis. Gaza only has 16 partially functioning health facilities remaining. Before Israel's assault, Gaza had 36 hospitals. The hospitals that are still working are operating far beyond their capacity, have been turned into makeshift refugee camps to house the displaced, and makeshift morgues, with health officials describing the situation as catastrophic. The health ministry estimates that over 60,000 people have been wounded in Gaza, with hundreds more casualties every day. The casualty count at this point is nearing 25,000, more than 10,000 of them children. For more, we're joined by Dr. James Smith, an emergency medical doctor who just returned from Gaza earlier this month, where he worked alongside Palestinian healthcare workers to treat patients at Al-Aqsa Hospital, located in Deir al-Balah in the middle of the Gaza Strip. Dr. James was in Gaza with the organization Medical Aid for Palestinians. He's joining us now from London. Dr. James, welcome to Democracy Now! Describe what you saw, what you confronted, the work you were doing, what's happening at Al-Aqsa Hospital.
Hi, Amy. So, yes, as you say, I was working with a team, or there were 10 of us. Myself, I was with the organization Medical Aid for Palestinians. We were accompanied by colleagues from the International Rescue Committee. And very importantly, we were, it's important to really reiterate that we were working with our Palestinian colleagues, so doctors, nurses, other healthcare professionals at Al-Aqsa, Al-Aqsa Hospital. Al-Aqsa is a hospital based in the middle area of Gaza, so south of Gaza City and north of Khan Yunis. Myself, I was working in the emergency room, so we would position ourselves in the ER every morning and really, at that point, wait to see what the day would bring. Every single day, without exception, there were multiple mass casualty incidents at the hospital. So that's several patients presenting at a time with traumatic injuries of varying severity. Those patients would require stabilization and then often transfer through to the operating room for surgical intervention. Some patients would require palliative care if we were able to provide some form of palliative care. And in addition to many, many trauma patients, and by many, I mean several hundred over the time that we were working at Al-Aqsa, we were also treating patients presenting with complex medical problems. So people that had suffered heart attacks, for example, had suffered from strokes, people whose hypertension or diabetes management had been negatively impacted, usually through a lack of access to their usual medication, or because they hadn't been able to see their usual doctor for several months. And then furthermore, we were also seeing an even greater number of people with effectively primary healthcare level problems. So the entirety of the primary healthcare or community care system in Gaza has completely collapsed. In fact, the entire healthcare system, the Ministry of Health has already announced several months ago, has completely collapsed. But that meant that anyone presenting with more minor complaints, coughs, colds, diarrheal illnesses, they were all also presenting to the emergency room to be seen by the doctors and nurses there.
Can you talk about treating children, Dr. James?
Sure. So as you've mentioned, a significant proportion of the people that have been killed since the start of this escalation are children. We certainly saw every mass casualty incident in the emergency room. There were several children also present. I remember very vividly some of the most traumatic injuries inflicted upon people were inflicted upon children. And they would include open chest wounds, open abdominal wounds, traumatic amputations, severe full thickness burns to a substantial proportion of the body area. Really some of the most horrific traumatic injuries that I have ever seen.
We're actually showing images for a TV audience of Al-Aqsa Hospital and of the children and the adults who have been wounded there. You know, it's really important to point out, if you're talking about a hospital in normal times that has repeatedly been attacked, it would, and that's severely compromised in its functioning. But we're talking about this constant bombardment that where you have people coming in who have been severely wounded. You have people taking refuge there. And is it both like a refugee camp and a morgue?
So there were several thousand people that had sought supposed sanctuary within the hospital compound itself. And we've seen this in several other hospitals across the Gaza Strip. There were reports, for example, of thousands of people sheltering in the Al-Shifa compound before that was surrounded and raided by the Israeli occupation forces. The same was the case at Al-Aqsa. So there were people staying in makeshift tents in and around the hospital buildings, just up the main street adjacent to the hospital, another IDP camp, internally displaced persons camp, had sort of formed very organically on open land. As the Israeli ground forces moved closer to the hospital and as the bombardment, the artillery and air bombardment intensified, many thousands of those displaced people have displaced further south towards Rafah. And that also includes patients who were in the hospital at the time that we were working there. Many of them have also fled, along with many of the staff as well.
I wanted to go to a clip, and it's really important to play these clips. Right now, Gaza has experienced the longest communications blackout of this Israeli attack for the last 3 months. I think it's something like 7 days. So it's really hard to get information inside this intense Israeli bombardment in the vicinity of Nasser Hospital, the main hospital in Khan Yunis, the largest remaining semi-functioning health facility in Gaza. And tanks and armored vehicles are on the main road leading to the area. On Wednesday, Democracy Now! Reached Dr. Ahmed Maghrabi, who works in Nasser Hospital. He described the situation on the ground and the difficulty in getting out any messages. This is what he had to say.
Thank you, sister, you're asking about us. Thank you for letting me speak out here. We don't have internet at all. I managed to get a very weak signal. I can't upload any of these videos. Yeah, 90% of people who are already evacuated at the hospital, they evacuated from the hospital. 90% of medical personnel evacuated from the hospital. And this is my little daughter, actually. She got head trauma yesterday. You know, hundreds of these evacuated people at the corridor, somebody pushed her and she fell on her head. Now I'm taking care about this little girl. She needs medicine. She's not well. So I stay at the hospital now, but I want to evacuate. Situation is catastrophic, sister. Really, I'm very tired. I'm very tired.
That's Dr. Ahmed Maghrabi, and the image we've been showing as he spoke was Dr. Maghrabi holding his own wounded daughter. I'm wondering, Dr. James, if you can talk about the significance, the medical significance of a complete, almost complete telecommunications blackout in terms of ambulances being reached, people being able to communicate to get help.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a catastrophic development. As you've mentioned, Amy, this, I think, is the seventh time that the Israelis have suspended access to telecommunications across almost the entirety of the Gaza Strip. This is now day six or seven of a complete sort of telecommunications blackout. It makes it almost impossible to do anything. So people, in the first instance, people can't reach their families, their loved ones. They can't communicate with colleagues. They can't reassure family that they're okay. Or indeed, that relatives and friends can't inform family members and so on when somebody has been killed or injured. There have been occasions where the emergency number has not been in use. So as you say, it's been difficult to call ambulances or mobilize ambulances to places where there has been an air or artillery strike. It makes it very difficult for health and humanitarian workers to do their essential
Dr.
work,
Smith,
so they can't coordinate with each other.
We only have 10 seconds. What message do you have for the world just having come out of Gaza? 10 seconds.
The violence needs to end immediately.
Dr. James Smith, emergency medical doctor, just back from Gaza, where he worked to treat patients at Al-Aqsa Hospital. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Has job openings. Check democracynow.org.
For 40 years, the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, a.k.a. SFPIRG, has been helping students build communities at SFU. Campus organizations like Out on Campus and Embark developed out-of-action groups at SFPIRG. Action groups are one of the ways that student activists can take action for change. Visit us at www.sfpirg.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about starting your own action group today.
Listen to music and podcasts from CGSF 90.1.